You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to a Thursday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here with David Ramil and Sports Illustrated's Rohan Nadkarni. We're going to talk about Rohan's awesome feature story on Dion Waiters and that intense rehab later on in the show. But let's start with the news out of Miami that Goran Dragic underwent surgery on his right knee and is expected to miss the next 2 months of the season. Dragic has been in and out of the lineup, having played just 14 games, and even when he has played, seemed to be slowed down by what's been a lingering issue. Dragic and the Heat have tried to push through it, but they've decided it's best to just shut him down, at least until the All-Star break. Rohan, what does this change about the Heat's approach for the rest of the season here?
The first thing that pops to my mind is the silver lining, right? I think this obviously opens the door for Justice Winslow to play a lot more point guard. I think he should start at point guard moving forward. I think the season now kind of becomes, who do we have that can handle the ball on this team? I mean, you don't really want Dwayne doing it full time. You know, you mentioned Dion Waiters, and maybe when he comes back, there's a role for him there as kind of a ball handler. But my first thought was, what's the silver lining? What can they gain from this? And I think first and foremost is Justice Winslow should see all his playing time at point guard from this point forward. I mean, there's no reason for him not to be playing point guard full time. There's no one in his way. They don't have any other point guards on the roster. So that was probably my initial thought.
David, I've speculated about the idea of trading Goran Dragic. But obviously, that's not going to happen now. This could also impact how he and the Heat approach his player option at the end of the year, because you and I have both speculated in this case that the Heat might try to talk him into declining the player option in favor of maybe a long-term deal worth a little bit less money per year. We know his athleticism hasn't been what it used to be. Are you hopeful that most of that is due to that lingering knee issue and not so much the age issue and maybe this isn't a permanent thing?
Well, there's no way of really measuring that, right? I mean, at this point, he is older. That's the you know, it's factual that he is getting older, and we're not quite sure how much to quantify is based on his age or whether or not it is a lingering knee issue. We can only hope that it's 100% based on that lingering issue. But, you know, he's going to come back. We know he's going to do everything in his power to rehab. He is a diligent worker by all accounts. And we assume that he's probably going to be able to get pretty close to full strength, even at his age. And if that's the case, then I don't see why Miami wouldn't want him to be a part of their future for a few more years at the very least. Now, I'm curious from the Goran's perspective whether or not it's something that he feels that he can't take a chance as far as renegotiating a contract, whether or not he'll immediately opt in now. And I think from most people's perspective, that seems to be the likely course, right? That he'll say, I've got $20 million guaranteed for next season. I'm going to take that. Even if Miami is able to negotiate off the books some kind of a four-year deal, maybe for a little bit longer and less money per year, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how that plays out, to be honest with you.
Rohan, I want to go back to something you kind of threw out there. What do they do now? As far as that point, because obviously Justice Winslow probably, it looks like he's going to get the start here, as he has in the last several games that Dragic has missed. But when Winslow's not on the floor, and especially when Winslow and Wade are both not on the floor for those disaster minutes when that does happen, that offense just, like, it can't do anything. And look, we thought about, you know, they have a 15th roster spot. There was sort of the idea that they could use a backup point guard before, but where do you play him? Who do you take minutes away from? You know, do you end up basically benching Tyler Johnson, who they've experimented with at point guard? That hasn't quite worked out. He's really a shooting guard when it comes down to it. Do they need to go out and get somebody now?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think they'll probably try Tyler for a little bit, only because they have so many guards. I feel like Spo is going to try to ride that into the ground as much as possible. In a way, it's kind of an opportunity, right, to be like, you know, the rotation didn't really make sense. We have too many guys at this one position. Okay, with Goran out, maybe if we try one of them here long enough, it'll work. I mean, I agree, the Tyler point guard thing, they've tried it before. They tried it earlier in his career. Yeah, I remember Michael Carter-Williams once a long time ago making it almost impossible for Tyler to just bring the ball past half court. It's going to be interesting, man. I don't think they'll pick up someone right away. only because they're so close to the luxury tax. There's all those concerns for them. It's not great to say. It's not exciting to say. But I do think that the Tyler experiment is going to have to go on for a little bit longer before they can. I mean, who do they bring in? Do they bring back Briante Weber or only to let him go again? I mean, I just don't know who they bring in right now that's a much better option than what they have on the roster, considering there's going to be a cost to that one way or another. I mean, maybe you can even – might be time to whisper Austin Rivers' name, you know, the Grizzlies.
Oh, man.
Apparently that's not a done deal. I don't know. I'm not reporting that. It's just speculation on my part. But I think the Tyler experiment's going to have to go on for a little longer.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with that. I mean – you know, Mario Chalmers is out there working out, trying to get healthy. I don't see that as an option. You're right. It's just like, who do you bring in that deserves minutes, even over some underwhelming Heat rotation guys? Like, there's nobody out there, really. I think that maybe you could trade one of these pieces to get a point guard. Easier said than done, obviously, but maybe they explore that. To me, I think you've got to just throw Justice Winslow out there. Let him be the starting point guard. Figure out whoever the off-ball guard is going to be. Just whatever makes sense. But for me, you know, and David, we've talked about this, how Winslow playing point guard, it looks much better when Hassan Whiteside is not playing center next to him, right? Yeah. And so now I'm thinking, like, okay, we keep looking at this point guard spot, but really, should we be looking at the rest of this rotation and the rest of the starting lineup? Does this, I mean, this is a 2-month thing. I don't think it's going to happen right away. But I do think, like, if Eric Spoelstra is still committed to winning games and Justice Winslow is sort of the de facto point guard at this point, do you bench Hassan Whiteside and James Johnson in favor of that Bam Adebayo, Kelly Olynyk front court that Justice Winslow just plays so much better with? Like, do you almost have to do that? Is Spoelstra forced to do that if he really wants to win games in this next 2 months?
No, he won't do it. I mean, that's clear. I don't think he sees that what everybody else does, or if he does, he's willing to ignore it or try to find some way to push through it and expect them to become better than they have been. Obviously, the lineup favors the return of Bam, Kelly Olynyk to the starting group there. They play more efficiently alongside Justice. But, you know, for whatever reason, Eric Spoelstra has elected to keep Whiteside and Johnson in there, and I think he's going to continue to do that even with Goran out. It doesn't make any sense. You know, even if it's for a 2-month experiment, you could just say, look, this is the unit that works best. We need Justice to start the point guard, but I don't know that he can continue to upset Hassan Whiteside, who we know to be very temperamental.
Fortunately for the Heat, Deion Waiters is participating in contact drills, could be making his way back onto the court soon. Maybe that he's the answer, you know, just maybe he becomes the point guard. I don't know. Obviously, that could help replace Dragic, but we'll talk about that next. But first, everybody make sure to make your way to reddit.com/r/heat today, December 20th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time for our Reddit AMA. It'll be David and I answering any and all of your questions about the Miami Heat, the podcast, whatever questions you have about Rohan, we'll answer those too. Whatever you want to talk about. Again, that's reddit.com/r/heat today, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Ask us whatever you want. We look forward to chatting with you over there. We've done these in the past. They're always a lot of fun. We always get a bunch of great questions. So that's reddit.com/r/heat today at 2 p.m. We'll see you there. Rohan recently spent some time with Deion Waiters in Miami. He's getting closer to returning from ankle surgery that he had almost a year ago. Despite Waiters being the butt of jokes about contract years, gaining weight, all that, he said he didn't care about any of that. He told you, "I hate when people say I got paid. F the money. I want to play, but I don't need that to tell the entire world. They don't understand." So, Rohan, you've now done 2 profiles on Deion Waiters, 2 long pieces on Deion. Do you feel like you understand him?
To a degree, I do. I mean, I think he's just someone who, especially after spending time in Philadelphia, I think it's, I obviously can't relate to him. I just think he has such an interesting story. I mean, where he comes from, the confidence he needed. I'll never forget, I was just talking to him when we were doing the story. We were talking about his son playing football, and I was like, "You used to play football, right?" And he said, "Yeah, I played football. I stopped after my mom got shot." For him to say something like that so casually, for him to be – for that to be like a normal part of his childhood growing up, I think that it's affected him in profound ways that you, I, or David probably can't understand. I just think he's had, you know, a very unique life. I think his confidence comes from a place of, you know, people – it's obviously a little bit of a joke, right? The Philly cheese attitude. He wrote that memorable Players Tribune essay. But I do think kind of the childhood he had the stuff he was around growing up has had, you know, an impact on it. It has bred that kind of confidence that he has for a good reason. So I think that's where he's coming from. The thing I can say about Deion that I love, and obviously I got a soft spot for him, is he's authentic. There's nothing about him that feels like a performance. You know, in every situation I've talked to him, he comes off the same in a good way. You know, he's not, there's no false swagger. He's not doing it for the retweets or anything like that. I think he's an authentic guy. And I think that, you know, that confidence comes from a very good place, and it comes from an earned place, considering, you know, kind of the circumstances surrounding him for so much of his life.
So, look, I know people have accused him of fleecing the Heat, you know, waiting until to get that surgery until after he signed that 4-year, $52 million contract. And that's also, I think, part of the jokes and part of the things that he's heard out there. What never made sense to me about that theory and that assertion was the fact that he played 30 games after he signed the contract, right? He played 30 games. That ankle irritated itself, and he ended up getting surgery in January, you know, of the following year after the summer he signed the deal. So that part never made any sense to me. You mentioned the confidence. It's not an act. He's got this great quote to you. I know I'm better than a lot of these guys in the mother effing league. I only gave y'all a taste. I know I can do more. I love that confidence. I mean, but look, he's going to be 27 when he gets back on the court, right? I mean, whatever the prime of his career, this is it, I suppose. How much can Deion Waiters really help the Heat? Because that's the big question here. Like, if you're looking at what this Heat season is, right? You know, obviously Justice Winslow, Josh Richardson, Bam Adebayo, you expect them to continue to get better bit by bit throughout the season. But Deion Waiters could sort of just like crash this entire, like crash into the wall here of American Airlines Arena and just be like, dude, we're doing this. Just like sort of that 30-11 stretch a couple seasons ago. I mean, how much can he help the Heat?
I mean, I'm not going to act like he's the savior. I do think he can bring an energy, an attitude. I think JJ brings that to a degree. And I think we've talked about this before, but I do think Waiters gives them a confidence. I'm not saying that this is a team that lacks it. Obviously, having Dwayne helps. But, you know, he gives them a little bit of a swagger. He gives them a little bit of an energy. I think he could be great as a sixth man for this team. I think he could do, you know, a lot for this team in terms of giving them another ball handler, giving them another scorer. I mean, we've seen – I think we all want Josh Richardson to get those end-of-game reps that he's getting, and he's getting better at them. But there are times when he's been struggling. And I think Deion is kind of a safety valve. He's kind of someone who can get to the rim when they need someone to run a pick and roll. They don't have a lot of those guys, frankly. So I think there are ways he can help. Again, I don't want to come off and say he's the savior. He's going to be the guy that kind of comes in and fixes everything. I think he's a piece of the puzzle, but I think he can help. And obviously, you can't look at that 28-game stretch when he was playing and extrapolate for his whole career. Obviously, he's had plenty of other times in his career where maybe he wasn't playing as well then. But we've seen some measure of proof that what he can bring to this team, you know, it's not like JJ where he's on the wrong side of 30. He still is in his prime. And, you know, you mentioned the ankle stuff and, you know, the fleecing the team. That also never made sense to me. I mean, if anyone knew his medical situation, it was the team, right? Like, you know, their doctors, I'm sure, took a look at him, like had all the information. They still made the deal. The impression I got from Deion was he'd never experienced something like this before. He'd never had a major injury. I don't think that it's not that he didn't take it seriously, but I think he was like, he wanted to play. You know, he signed the contract. He wanted to go out and prove it. He wanted to build on the success he had. I think he knew that if he got the surgery, it was going to be a setback. It was going to be him kind of having to walk away after experiencing the most success in his career. And I think that that's what made him wait. And he tried his best. I mean, he was trying to fight through it. I mean, the guy played with the stress factor. So, you know, that situation is definitely interesting to me. But I don't think he can come in and be the savior. But I think he adds a dimension to this team that they can certainly use to their advantage.
David, when I was reading Rohan's piece, and it starts with this anecdote about Waiters's practice led by Pat Riley. And I don't know if it's because we do this podcast five times a week and we probably just spend way too much talking to each other, but I just heard you in the back of my mind screaming about this anecdote. It was like a 2-hour practice, right, Rohan, or something to that effect, where it was just like an old school Pat Riley ran practice, old school hard as nails sweat fest is what's written in your story. And all I can hear is David just being like, why are you doing this? David, what was your impression when you were reading that?
I was okay with it because, again, I think it's all in moderation, which, you know, is completely against everything that Riley seems to preach. You know, he wants to push you to the point where most players will wind up breaking. And it's the rare exception that doesn't. But I think, you know, knowing what Dion was going through, where he probably needs that extra push because maybe, if not the confidence necessarily is shook, but at the same time, he needs to remind everybody that he can still play at a high level and maybe even kind of remind himself a little bit. Obviously, there were weight issues that he had to work his way through, and that's okay. If that's the kind of extra push that he needs to get him to the point where he can help this team, if not necessarily lead it, that's okay. My problem is having those kinds of practices the morning of a long game against a playoff contender, the day after a long road trip, or, you know, the day in the middle of a long road trip, like we've seen from this Heat team in the past. And that's where it gets to the point where you see the number of injuries start to pile up, because I think as much as we all love Heat culture, I think we love it much more in theory than in reality, because it could push to the players to the point where they'll wind up breaking and again, going through a number of injuries. I mean, who's to say that Goran Dragic at his age wasn't pushed to the point where he is right now, because he wants to live up to Heat culture. He is as big a preacher and proponent of Heat culture as anybody on the roster. And maybe he pushed himself too far and he wound up costing himself a couple months, plus whatever games he's already missed to this point. But as far as Dion is concerned, I like it, you know, because I think, again, he needed to lose the weight. He hadn't pushed himself to this point previously, so that's okay. I just don't want him, if he's going through these kind of injury issues, or if, you know, weeks pass and that ankle starts to flare up, for Riley to step down from the front office and go, you know what, I'm going to run him for another 2.5 hours until he's, you know, recovering for an hour in the locker room.
Yeah, I mean, he gained 15 pounds, right, Rohan? And he's like, he was open about that and the fact that he's trying to lose it. How far along is he on that?
I mean, he looked great when I saw him. I think that reporters saw him today and he could probably say even better what he looked like. I think he looked
2 pounds off his playing weight, I think that's what he said. Right, from 223 down, he needs to be at 221, I think is what he said.
That's right. So, I mean, he was close. I mean, I will say about, you know, kind of the Riley workout, I think it was, you know, I think it was just a little bit of a wake up, not even like a,
right,
something to help him get through the grind. So I think that was a good kind of a mix up for him to kind of get into a different routine than the one he'd been in. As far as the weight gain stuff, yeah, I mean, I talked to him about it. I think a big part of it, again, was I think that he couldn't do anything for 5-6 months. You know, it's like you can diet as much as you want, but you can't move around when you got a bum ankle.
Right.
Yeah, I think that I'm not really worried about him getting in shape. I know I got a soft spot for the guy, but I do think that he's going to be in playing shape definitely very soon. I think that was the same problem last year, frankly. When he got back on the court, people were kind of like, hey, you look a little heavier than last year.
I did, yeah.
Over the summer, he couldn't use that ankle the way he was accustomed to.
All right, it's almost Christmas. The Heat have had a lot taken away from them this season, but it's a season of giving. If you could give a Secret Santa gift to anyone on the Heat, who would it be? What would you get them? Rohan, let's start with you.
I would give Hassan Whiteside I would like give him Udonis Haslam's guest house or something like that. I would just force him to do something to embody the spirit of one of the greatest Heat players of all time, Udonis Haslam. Imagine if Udonis had the physical gifts that Hassan Whiteside had.
We've talked about this many times before.
How dominant of a player he would have been. Just something to kind of wake up the animal instincts within Hassan Whiteside. Just something to bring the toughness out. We've seen it for brief stretches. Just, you got to get him something, man. It's very, very frustrating to watch him, especially in the wake of how Bam has been playing. When Bam was starting, to see Bam actually set screens for his guards, to see Bam actually roll hard to the rim, it's just so frustrating to watch Hassan sometimes. You know, knowing what he could be with as physically talented as he is, I think that he doesn't realize that. I think he gets bothered when he's setting screens. He wants the ball. What I think he doesn't realize sometimes is the better screen he sets, the better chance he has of catching the ball, the better chance that he has of catching the ball in the paint with the opportunity to dunk it. So I'm getting Hassan Whiteside, you know, a Udonis Haslam VHS from the 2006 finals. You know, I'm getting him a room in Udonis's house, just something like that, because, you know, Udonis is on his way out of this league. It's push is going to come to shove for Hassan sooner rather than later. He needs to figure out, you know, what kind of player he wants to be. And, you know, there's a reason why he's been on the trade block. There's a reason why he draws the ire of so many fans. It's because we know how talented, how dominant he could be, but he just doesn't seem as committed night to night as he should be.
Maybe the maybe Udonis's bulldogs or whatever. What kind of dogs does he have? Or outside the guest house and just like scare him straight. David, what's your secret Santa?
Well, you know, I was going to take a page out of your extensive playbook and offer up two different gifts, but I'll stick to one. I want Josh Richardson to have a defining moment in the clutch. I think there's been so much pressure on him this season, and, you know, from the trade rumors that started right at the start of the season, right before the start of the season, you know, media day is supposed to be an opportunity to espouse all sorts of positivity, to focus on all the good things you did over the summer, to talk about how many opportunities you'll have in the future season, et cetera. And instead, already there was a dark cloud, hovering over this team with Jimmy Butler rumors and things of that sort. And, you know, obviously even from the first game of the season where he didn't connect on a game winner against the Magic and turned the ball over, and he's had other opportunities where he's fallen a little short. I feel like there's just been a lot on Josh to live up to. And, you know, we expected him to be able to take this big leap this season, and he's made some improvements, but there's also been, I think, a lack of a defining moment where you could say, damn, Josh has finally lived up to the expectations, where he's finally the player we had all hoped he'd be. So I'm hoping he has either, you know, something along the lines of like a 15-point fourth quarter with including a game winner. I know that sounds like a lot, but something like that where we can all just recognize that Josh, especially on a national stage, that he is the player that we expect him to be.
I'm shocked that wasn't more mean. We know that David has had it in for Josh.
I love Richardson, Ron.
Whatever your soft spot for Deion is, David has the opposite of that for Richardson.
Lies.
I don't know how you wrap that up and put a bow on it. But maybe in lieu of a defining moment, maybe just like some spiked eggnog, some liquid courage. Maybe just like let him get it out of his own head. Maybe he just needs to be a little bit more loosey goosey out there. Stop thinking so much right before the game. My secret Santa goes to Pat Riley. Ooh. And I'm giving him a book that I read this year, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Bleep. I'm sure you guys have heard of this.
Yeah.
In the Amazon description for the book, part of it says, for decades we've been told that positive thinking is the key to a happy, rich life. Bleep positivity, Mark Manson says. He's the guy that writes the book. Let's be honest, blank is blanked, and we all have to live with it. In his wildly popular internet blog, Manson doesn't sugarcoat or equivocate. He tells it like it is, a dose of raw, refreshing, honest truth that is sorely lacking today. I think that is sorely lacking within the Heat organization. I think that they have this whole roster has been sugarcoated. They're trying to get the most out of Hassan Whiteside still. They're trying to get the most out of guys like veterans who are on too bloated of contracts. It's time to stop caring so much about the guys on the roster, even though we care about them. But it's not working. They need to go in a new direction. And I think Pat Riley needs to just sort of pull the plug on this little passion project that he had a couple of years ago. Stop giving so much of a bleep and move on in a new direction, because that's what needs to happen if anything is going to get better. It's not enough to just be positive about it. It's time to just go in a new direction.
That's pretty heartless for the holidays, Wes. Like, I'll be honest with you.
Jesus, Wes. My God.
Yeah, you need to see Scrooged or something like that. Get a reminder about the true spirit of Christmas. I know you don't celebrate it, but that doesn't mean you can't embody the spirit of Christmas.
Wow, that was David-esque.
Hey, easy.
No, you're right. You're right. It wasn't, because David would never be that mean. Wow, man, Wes, and he came up with this whole little shtick too. I thought he'd be a little more chill about it, but not at all.
We could also give Bam Adebayo a starting job for Christmas. Yeah. Rohan, do you have any cooking tips?
Yes, I do have a cooking tip. Listen, I made some pork chops that, in my opinion, were a hit on my Instagram story the other night. I got a lot of DMs about him, compliments, which I appreciate.
Name drop. Any famous people?
No. No famous people, Wes. Come on. They're just poor shops, man.
You're best friends with Dion Waiters and Kevin Love. Come on. You know famous people.
Not.
Dion's definitely got a soft spot for pork chops. Come on. Sorry. Okay.
All right.
Sorry. We made so much progress.
Here is my tip for people. You might be wondering, how do I get a great sear on my meat? You know, you want that Maillard reaction. You want flavor. You want a nice crust on your meat. David, I'm sorry for another non-vegetarian related tip.
What are you going to do?
Does it work for cauliflower?
It doesn't work for cauliflower. But here's something people may not realize. In order to get a great sear on your meat, you actually want to get as much moisture out of it as possible. I know it sounds counterintuitive. You want your meat to be moist, but trust me, this works. So let's say you're making some pork chops. Maybe you're making a nice piece of steak, maybe even roasting a chicken. Something that I recommend to everyone, if you have a little bit of time, if you have the foresight, salt your meat the night before and let it sit in the refrigerator uncovered, preferably on a cooling rack or a wire rack if you have it. It's a small, simple step. All you need to do is remember the night before you're making a pork chop, a steak, chicken, like I mentioned, give a little bit of salt. Salt both sides heavily, you know. I know I said a little bit, but actually salt it heavily. Let it rest overnight. The salt's going to soak in and give it great flavor, and the meat's going to lose out a lot of moisture. That way, when you cook it, you're going to get a great, great crust on the outside. This is, some people call this dry brining. This is a tip that I stole from Kenji Lopez All, aka my guru, on SeriousEats.com. But all his recipes have been incredible. I've done this several times now, and it works like a charm every time.
Two questions. Do you pat the meat down afterwards?
I actually pat it down before.
Okay. And then, it's brined with the salt on it, and then you just throw that as is onto your cooking surface?
Yes. So this is what I do. The night before, I take the meat out, I dry it with a paper towel, salt it on both sides, put it on a wire rack, just set it in the fridge overnight.
Why is it uncovered in the refrigerator? Do you know the science behind that?
I think that the cool just helps draw the moisture out. You're not like aging it, but if you think of like processes like that, I think by leaving it uncovered, like the moisture won't get trapped in.
Wow. Great insight on Dion Waiters and how to properly dry your meats. We can't get this with any other guests.
My pleasure. Anytime, guys.
That's all we have for today. Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe to Locked On Heat on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you use to listen to podcasts. Leave us a rating and review while you're there. Make sure to reach out to Rohan Nadkarni on Twitter. You can find him right there on Twitter. That's his Twitter handle. And read his stuff over at Sports Illustrated. If you haven't checked out the Dion Waiters piece, we're going to add the link to our show notes so you can find it there too. And then you can reach us on Twitter as well, at Locked On Heat, or email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David. Thanks for joining me, Rohan.